Hi, this is Abby Fisher reporting on pages 238 to 241 of Special Topics in Calamity Physics by Marisha Pessel. I thought this scene was the key to my personal understanding of the novel. I think the central exchange between Larson and Blue has a lot to say about the Hydra-headed concept of truth and how it exists in the novel, whether it's historical truth, someone's true character, conspiracy, lies, and relationships. Playing with these various forms of truth are the main components in this scene's brilliance, which informs the rest of the novel and has allowed me to explore my deepest understanding of the giant concepts within this novel. And since all giant concepts kind of boil down to one ultimate truth, which I would argue does not exist in this novel, I will also explore the power of the author and her role as the omniscient creator. So first, I would like to tackle truth as the Shakespearean fool in Western tradition, in the form of Larson. The reader immediately learns that Larson is a special character because Dad says so, and there are very little things in this novel that Dad approves of or appreciates besides high art and himself. Larson is perceptive, and his eyes oozing all over you can see you as if you're naked, talking subconsciously in your sleep or in your deepest, darkest fantasies. Larson is intuitive, and he tells us the reason is because he's felt pain and suffered. It reminds me of Andaste and the image of a person being a perfectionist until at some point an event in their life shatters them into a million different pieces and different patterns like a kaleidoscope. And Larson could not play King Lear, I'm sure there is a pun intended, until he has experienced himself shattering over the loss of his father and discovered his own personal layers, and in doing so can now recognize those same feelings in other people and expose them for what they are, though he is classically unheeded and to a certain extent fails to realize the power his knowledge has over other people. The issue of acting and performance in relation to the truth is also central to Larson's own explanation of his character. He says that you can't pretend to be something else other than yourself or make it impossible for people to take their eyes off of you without experiencing these different layers of emotion to create emotive resonance and then be able to reflect it back on the audience. Without experience, one can never tell a convincing lie, and without experience, one can never see through a convincing lie. The references to Charles Manson throughout the novel are particularly chilling here, how he would look at you like he was drinking in your face, reading your experiences and taking them on as his own, making you see yourself in him and becoming attractive in terms of his following in the family. There are a lot of characters in this novel in search of truth, the Blue Bloods and their theories about Hannah, the June Bugs and their theories about Dad, and Blue in her desperate search for clarity in the face of so many lies. The concept of truth and the search for truth is mostly an obsession of the younger characters in the novel, or the inexperienced and naive. The foundation of the Blue Bloods' relationship with each other is constant stalking and sleuthing of Hannah Schneider. They do not seem to really have a relationship with each other beyond their shared infatuation. Blue observes how they compete with each other for Hannah's attention, stare jealously at each other when they get her attention, and even mold their lives to reflect her gentle yet powerful suggestions. However, unlike Larson, who is an actor and a life sufferer, can inhabit other people's experiences in order to see truth, whatever the Blue Bloods know about Hannah in some ways can only be interpreted through a lens of their own personal experiences. This is Pessel's point in her final essay question as to how the many written truths in the Western canon are nothing in the face of one's own experiences. We see the Western canon again being impotent in the final climactic scene when Blue and her father are fighting with the books and Blue still cannot bludgeon the truth out of her dad. In this novel, truth can only be really measured in accordance to how fathomable it could be in terms of someone's experience. What seems like a one-night stand at Cottonwood would not be anything else in the minds of two adolescent teenage boys who had engaged in lying sex, nor by two teenage girls who subconsciously mimic Hannah's performed promiscuity in the bathrooms of an old trucker bar. When the Blue Bloods shun Blue after Hannah's death, it is because they cannot fathom Hannah orchestrating a secret rendezvous. They can only interpret the actions of the night through their own reality and their own truth, such as their own desperate attempts to get her attention. They cannot fathom Hannah desperately trying to get one of their attention. Another aspect of the truth, and again the Shakespearean fool, the most famous of which was in King Lear, is that he is perceptive and emotionally separate from the truth. This quotes Barth's idea of pulling out of the story into a wider frame and seeing something differently than what it was close up. In a way, being too close to the truth distorts the truth like a funhouse mirror, and in order to truly see, one must ironically detach from the intimacy of the situation and look on as an observer. Blue is able to observe the nuances of the blue blood, but her own father is too close for her questioning. We see throughout the novel, truth is infinitely relative. Even when Dad says, fight for truth, he clarifies by saying, fight for your own truth. Near the end of the novel, Blue says to herself, if I can't trust Dad, then who can I trust? Before she tells him all her findings. Of course, this speaks to the repercussions of truth. The last thing Larson yells at her in their second meeting of revelation is, make sure you're ready for the truth. The idea of conspiracy is interesting in terms of truth as order and truth as oppressive. The layers of knowledge each character has, what they choose to share, what they work to hide, the lengths people go to deceive, and the secrets people keep are so deeply embedded that mixed with the search for truth, people are attracted to the order and clarity of a core curriculum and the safety of a semester schedule. Truth is order is safe because truth can be something we don't want to hear or not in our best interest to hear, as Dad calls truth the lonely girl at the dance who no one wants to dance with. What's interesting about conspiracy is that it creates the illusion of being chaotic, a safe and free chaos. Like Dad's analogy of a Kandinsky, there is eventually a frame around the painting. There is eventually a blueprint to a conspiracy, creating order, motives, and reason, which again can be safe and that there is a pattern, but also betraying, as it was all an illusion. What is so maddening about our final exam is that each answer could be right. It makes every theory plausible. Like in the movie La Aventura, there is no knowing. The final exam anticipates different questions and scenarios and what-if theories, almost as though to legitimize all the options while simultaneously jeopardizing the reliability of the characters and their motives. Pestle takes away the comfort of the final exam by giving us a final exam that's not meant to have one answer or one truth, which is the cruel but refreshing joke, or my own conspiracy theory. The power of the author over her characters and over the reader was particularly noticeable in this book. As Blue tumbles headlong into this odyssey for the truth, the reader is plummeting along with her and making the same mistakes as her. Like a Greek or Roman epic, I felt there was a strong sense of the storyteller playing with her pawns, like the gods on Mount Olympus capriciously twisting destinies and laughing at the concept of determinism and fate. What I really loved about this scene is that I couldn't really understand the nuances of the scene till I finished the entire novel. Even Larson's own story foreshadows Blue's loss of her father. The scene is like a premonition and revelation, and there's no way of knowing this until you read the novel and discover that Larson could have been referring to Hannah when he refers to seeing Blue's dad and his girlfriend. However, while getting all this information about acting and performance, neither the reader nor Blue can use the advice until the novel is over. Like when Blue receives a note from Jade inviting her to room 208, the first couple times you read the note, it comes across nice, especially in the context of the outgoing Charles. However, with a closer look, the note is dripping in sarcasm. I found myself compelled to turn back a few pages and read the note again after the Dungeons & Dragons mishap, just as this scene stuck out in my head more prominently after I had finished the novel rather than during the novel, or how the introduction made a lot more sense after I had finished the novel and became more of a conclusion. I was wondering if anyone else had moments like this, and what they were, and how they informed your reading of the novel, and the idea of truth through experience.